welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and it is now or never. As a matter of fact, I will have to emphasize, as I scan the news, as I look east, as I just look around, there is no sign, folks, that you even your the majority of these conservative politicians that are going into office have any clue, and or do they even care, really, about securing the Constitution? Because, well, they may care. Remember, knowledge is power. They may be good people, but they're not going to do anything for you. They're not going to get this done until you start holding them accountable. You have to understand, the appeal of riches, the avarice of the individual in America today, the individual alive, even back in the days of the framers, they kept on talking about avarice. You know, the greed and the lust for power and money, that has been with us ever since the beginning of time. And until you get serious, until you, if you don't take the stand and demand that they comply to that Constitution and use the tool in the Constitution to hold them accountable and to create literally a citizen vigilance movement in your, and you know, this is how the party, the party is culpable in so many ways. Now, I actually sit down with party leaders and they agree when you finally point it out, because reasonable people, equal informed, seldom disagree. Most people, as I say, are reasonable. They don't understand how they're the problems. They don't understand because maybe it is too complex for them. I say not. I don't say it's that complex. But I will say this, that we have a tough row to hoe. But it's your row, just like it's my row to hoe. We all have to be doing this. GR is not going to save you. Trump is not going to save you. The President of the United States cannot save you. Now, obviously, they can be very supportive of destroying you, and they can be very supportive of doing nothing while you're destroyed. It's now or never, folks. It is now or never. So, as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the evidence and evidence-based solutions. Now, I want to give you a little bit of quick feedback. I had a good short conversation with Senator candidate for Missouri, U.S. Senator candidate for Missouri, Paul Venable. And he actually went out to St. Louis, and he went into a very hostile area. And as a matter of fact, you know, he knew that, you know, he was in the wrong place when he started going through the questions and realized how hostile everybody would be. But here's the interesting thing. Many of the people there weren't really hostile towards him. It was just those who were putting it on and those who were trying to do this song and dance that government has to do for them. And actually, he used the line, ask not what government should do for you, but ask what you can do for government, in essence. Now, in all honesty, that little quote from Robert Kennedy may have articulated a very good message to quit asking people to get government to serve them, but it doesn't really highlight. And as a matter of fact, if I was Kennedy, I probably would have said, ask not what government can do for you. This is a self-government. You are the government. You are the problem. We're not here to serve you. You are here to serve yourself, not to basically put, you know, gold in your pockets, but you are here to serve and protect your liberty. You are here to serve and protect your sovereignty and your freedom. If you keep coming to us to ask us to give to you and to basically create an entitlement in a welfare state, you will destroy your self-government. And it's that simple. But ask not what you can do for, or ask what you can do for government, almost makes it seem like we're to be subjects to government. But actually, we want to really hit the nail on the head that we're supposed to be a self-government. You're supposed to be holding us accountable and keeping us, if I was in government, and keeping them, the government, in check with the Constitution to protect and preserve your freedoms and liberties. Anyway, the beautiful thing was, and so, and Paul Venable, I mean, he only had a minute, so he didn't even have the opportunity to do the elaboration that I did. But I mean, it was a very succinct message that he sent back. And the interesting thing was, as he was leaving, I mean, he was stopped by plenty of the people attending, and they all thanked him. And even one person came up and said, you know what? I don't necessarily agree with you, but I really appreciate you, and I have absolute respect for you because you had the guts to actually, you know, speak your position and so forth. And, you know, I wanted to thank you for coming. And so even though we go into the valley of death and fight and try to, you know, what we think, you know, is going to our death, well, actually we will preserve, or we will withstand their onslaught. Folks, he's acting in faith. Everybody needs to apply faith. Everybody needs to have faith in this Constitution. I'm telling you that most people will get it. They will start to agree with you, and they'll go, yes, I am the problem. But they don't know they're the problem. Just like most of the Republican Party and the Constitution Party, most of these people don't even know that the party is the problem. And so when we actually start, because I even have these conversations with the, you know, Independent American Party and Constitution Party members, and I point out how their party is the problem as well. And you know what? They agree with me, except for those who refuse to accept the truth. There are always those that will stand out there in the middle of the day, look up at that sun and say, boy, the moon sure is bright today. I mean, there's always going to be a denier, but deniers are not reasonable people. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. But when you deal with a denier, they'll never agree with you, especially if they've got an agenda, especially if they've got something to drag along. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much time with this intro. We are going through the Constitution. Excuse me. And we left off with Article 7. We kind of was wrapping up with this. And I want to emphasize this, because this really has to be emphasized, that Article 7 is the most succinct. And as far as I'm concerned, it is the part of the Constitution that gives clarity to what the Constitution is and who has the ultimate say over the Constitution. It's clear right here. Because, and this is supported by Madison and the framers throughout the ratification debates, even afterwards, as Madison was holding them accountable and moving forward. He kept on asserting that the states are the parties. They are the ultimate arbiters. They have the ultimate say. They are the ultimate tribunal in determining whether that compact, whether that instrument, he calls it, referring to the Constitution, is being violated or not. And so that little line, the ratification of the Convention of Nine States, so they're basically identifying that this is a compact, and they're identifying who the parties are to this compact. And they're basically stating that once nine states ratify this Constitution, then the following is a part of Article 7, and this is what it says, shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states so ratifying the same. There you go. So in other words, once they had nine states on board, then boom, slam dunk, they could move forward. Here's the problem. Nobody really celebrated. They kind of celebrated when the seventh or the ninth state, and I forget, was it Connecticut? I'll have to look it up, and I will have that to you either shortly or right after the break, as soon as my assistant here actually pulls that stuff up for me. But what we want to do is we want to kind of help you understand that they knew that the Constitution could not take force, could not actually be valid, and they couldn't actually succeed as a union without one of the real main players. And the real main players they saw were the largest ports and the largest throughputs of commerce, because that was what was feeding America. And those ports, even though Boston was a decent port, if you look, getting goods in and out of Boston was very hard. I mean, it was a tough highway. But getting in and out of New York from New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and so forth was a lot easier than going all the way up to Massachusetts. So New York was a very critical state, as well as Virginia. I mean, Virginia had, you know, the Potomac, it had, you know, Norfolk, it had all of those seaports available to it. And so when we really look at the true success behind the ratification, they knew if this was going to be a successful union, they needed either Virginia or New York to be a part of this. So it wasn't until Virginia ratified that they truly celebrated, because they knew they had it, and Hamilton knew it too. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as promised, and actually, I have to thank my faithful assistant.
Thank you.
So, you're more than welcome. So, as we were stating, it was New Hampshire. I mean, New Hampshire was a huge hub of commerce at the time. I'm just kidding. New Hampshire was small, but all of these states were significant. Whatever they were providing, they knew that they all needed each other. And so you have to understand that the world's empire at that point in time was Britain, that monster that they just broke away from. This is the empire that defeated the latest world empire, which was Spain. And they had become, just get your head around this. Spain was a pretty decent-sized country compared to, I mean, if you look at landmass, access, commerce, controls, and so forth, Britain is an island. Britain, you know, the least surmountable odds. I mean, come on, look at this. This little teeny island, who would have thought that it would have been the ruler of the world for a couple hundred years? Come on. I mean, yeah, maybe France or some other kingdom in Europe, maybe, in Western society. But as far as Western society and the empire that ruled, and here's an interesting thing, that when Britain became the ruler, they did have a level of civility. In other words, they weren't the conquering tyrants like Spain and or Italy. I mean, Italy was Rome, right? The previous dominant one. And, you know, if we look at some of the other Ottoman empires and as far as Islam and so forth and how things went back, it even Genghis Khan, who conquered the world. I mean, folks, these people were ruthless. These other countries were ruthless in contrast to Britain. And even though Britain may have conquered the world, they didn't go around and, you know, and meddle with Spain anymore. They defeated them and they started, you know, taking more and more control and expanding themselves. But it wasn't like they were trying to wipe Spain off the map. And as a matter of fact, they left Spain, Portugal, and many of the Mediterranean states to their own demise because they knew that they had other problems that they had to... I mean, look at Spain today. Look at Greece today. Look at, you know, many of the Mediterranean, even Italy and so forth. Many of these Mediterranean states are, you know, on the brink of ruin, but... what happened? I mean, Spain and Portugal, many of these states were taking back the golds and riches that they found and took from Americas. What happened? I mean, Britain didn't find any gold. They found commerce. They grew themselves. They didn't steal their way into wealth. They developed it. See the big difference? And so what happened? I mean, look at Portugal, Spain, and most of those Mediterranean countries are all becoming destitute because they implemented socialism and their economics. Where's that money? Where's all that gold? What happened to all those riches? They're gone. Wow. See what happens? See what happens when we marginalize the importance of labor, work ethics, and those types of things. And see what's happening to America as we begin to marginalize the work. I could tell you stories. I get very frustrated when I try to get, you know, young men or even contractors and adults to do their job. Next thing I know, they just went sideways on me because I wanted them to actually do what I was paying them for. I mean, do you go to a baker and say, I want some donuts, and they throw some dough in a box and say, there you go. That's not donuts. That's just dough. Maybe, you know, an initial stage, but it ain't donuts. Anyway, so the states that actually ratified, and I want to prove this point, Delaware, teeny state, Pennsylvania, landlocked state, New Jersey, it had a coastline, but it did not have good seafaring ports, necessarily. And so it wasn't a hub of commerce. It was technically a small state. And as a matter of fact, the population at the time in New Jersey, at the time of the Constitution, was 184,000. 184,000 people. Okay? Georgia, 60,000 people. I mean, it was really small. Connecticut was actually bigger than New Jersey. And then Massachusetts, now that was a big state. That was almost 400,000. And Maryland, almost 400,000. But Maryland, too, did not have a lot of really good seaports. And it, you know, it wasn't that big in size. It just had a lot of people. If you look at South Carolina actually had some seaports, but both Georgia and South Carolina created this landlocked problem. Virginia hadn't ratified. So for commerce to go from the northern states into and through Virginia, well, that would pose a problem if they didn't ratify. You see my point? So Virginia, and then New Hampshire, South Carolina, then New Hampshire. So those are the nine states that ratified at that point. They didn't have the I would say, the final three, which were really big hubs. New York, or so Virginia had almost 700,000 people. It was the big bomb. I mean, they were the boss. And this is one of the reasons why, when you look at these other states, you can actually see the states that actually heavily debated. Let me go through the states that heavily debated the Constitution. Pennsylvania ratified. They had almost 500,000 people, but they heavily debated it because, you know, they had enough people to say, hey, you know, is this a good thing for us or not? Massachusetts was another one. They heavily debated it. South Carolina heavily debated it. New Hampshire didn't, but Virginia did, New York did, and North Carolina did. They have vigorously debated this Constitution. This is big. This is very important because it shows that the people, or I should say the cabals that were in control of these states, the avarice that was holding these states. This is what George Washington referred to this as avarice. These people didn't want to give up their power and surrender it to this national government. And it was a very limited national government, but they didn't want to surrender any of it. They wanted to maintain, in other words, they were more happily, they were more content, more happily, they were more content with allowing the Union to fail and then be conquered. Well, see, they didn't think it would happen. Oh, well, we, the Union, beat them before. We'll form another Union down the road when somebody comes. Are you kidding me? Until they actually bonded into this union, they were all going their separate ways. As a matter of fact, I've told you time and time again, they were very well divided over labor. They were very well divided over economics. They were very well divided over religion, especially religion. I mean, these were independent and sovereign, and they were creating their own culture. Did you know Virginia celebrated its own Thanksgiving, where New England, and I should say Massachusetts, celebrated their own Thanksgiving? So they were already going down these paths of creating their own cultures, their own traditions, and so forth. And it wasn't until the union of the Constitution that kind of pulled everything together and kind of helped them say, you know, see the picture that the total of the sum was much greater than the total of the individuals. And, you know, that basically accounts for synergy when you actually pull in together what these guys could do together. It was far superior than what each of them could have done on their own, or even what a couple of them could have done together. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'll give you the analogy of the Beatles. If you look at what the Beatles did individually as musicians and artists, none of their work came close to what they did as a band. And so that's a testament to basically point out the power of synergy when you actually get people working and cooperating together, especially at a grander scale. Anyway, I digress. So as we wrap up the articles of the Constitution, the one thing I want to point out is the little bit of guidance that they put at the very bottom. And then it was basically, this is what it said, done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present the seventh day of the September in the year of our Lord. You know, it doesn't say anything about these people being religious, but wow, they sure included in the year of our Lord. What's up with that? And now they allow a chaplain to say a prayer, but boy, they sure mock God today, don't they? Anyway, 1787 of the Independence of the United States of America, the 12th in witness there whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names. And then they wrote down, you know, the individuals and basically signed. But the point is that the states that were in attendance, they ratified the Constitution. In other words, those states, they agreed and signed off on, and they accepted this to be forwarded out to Continental Congress. So this went to Continental Congress and basically guided them on what to do with this so that it could be, and we'll get into this when we come back, and we're going to get into the third and final preamble in the Constitution. So when we come back, we're hitting the Bill of Rights, but we're going to kind of cover what Continental Congress had to do and why this was all done the way it was done. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Now, technically, if I'm correct, New York only had one representative, and I think that was Mr. Hamilton. But anyway, what we want to do is kind of give you the highlights of what ended up happening afterwards. Now, so you got to remember that these men who were in this convention were very familiar with the plight of Continental Congress, that Continental Congress's hands were tied. They saw the Union being decimated, and they understood. It's interesting how they all came from the cabals of some of these big states. As a matter of fact, to be clear, Governor Randolph, who was, you know, in the big bomb, right? I mean, he was the governor of Virginia. He was at this convention, and he refused to sign the Constitution, along with George Mason, another huge leader in Virginia. The people that did sign it, you know, were Madison and so forth. And so I think there were three other delegates, and Washington being one of them, another, you know, bigger than life leader. But the point I'm trying to make is that these men didn't deny the fact that they knew the problems that the states would have, because the states would not willingly give up their control. That if they sent this to the state legislatures, this would die. In other words, the Constitution and this, and all of this hard work and everything that Madison had vested into this would have been for naught. And so what they did was brilliant, because they did make some significant changes. One of the changes everybody, except for Rhode Island, was all on board with. But as soon as it got out to the cabals, it was one of those things that the cabals pointed out and said, hey, we don't like this. Even though they were very, they themselves were one of the number one complainers of the exact same problem. Ah, they wanted to keep it so that they could always thwart and protect themselves. And so, which was a unanimous acceptance of any change to the Articles of Confederation. And so when you look at it, I mean, hypocrisy was abounding. And I don't think you could have gotten away with calling people hypocrites back then, because you would have been insulting their honor. So you could have probably technically and legally got away with it if you could prove your case. But the point is that this went to the Continental Congress, and Continental Congress sent it out with their endorsements and instructions to please form conventions. Now, were the states obligated to create conventions? Absolutely not. So what ended up happening was there were a few states, Pennsylvania. Why Pennsylvania? I mean, Pennsylvania was a decent-sized state, and it actually vigorously debated it, which is kind of interesting. But Pennsylvania really did need, I mean, it had Philadelphia, which was kind of a seaport. It's not a seaport today. It's not a major, you know, hub of commerce today. But back in those days, with sales and so forth, and being able to float commerce downriver, okay, yeah, they had access to moving commerce out of Philadelphia. It was tough. But that was just a small little corner of Pennsylvania. Many of the folks in Pennsylvania, you know, didn't have the luxury, or, you know, it was hard for them to get their commerce out. And so they were one of those states that was really dependent on it, but there were those who still had a cabal that wanted to withhold it. So the point is that every state that actually had a serious debate on the Constitution, you can guarantee that each of these states had cabals that were trying to protect their power. And so that's why, you know, Pennsylvania being, you know, what I would have considered a slam dunk, wasn't such a slam dunk, because it was big enough that it actually had a cabal. So as we look at the states and the ratifying and so forth, that we were blessed actually by these cabals. What would have happened had we not gotten the ratification debates? Then we never would have gotten the clarity to what every single one of these lines meant. Do you understand the divine providence involved in this to ensure that all of this whole stage, what would have happened if this Constitution was submitted and created right during the Revolutionary War for the Articles of Association? What would have happened had they created this Constitution at that point in time? I will honestly tell you that I believe it would have absolutely been ratified, rubber stamped quickly, because the urgencies of the day, they needed to form a union. And so had this actually happened, I don't think we would have had ratification debates. I don't think we would have even come close to going down this path. Why is that significant? Because we needed the ratification debates more for today than they did back then. Wow, what does that mean? That means that because back then these men were honorable, they lived within the understandings of the Constitution for the most part for up to 50 years. They, you know, when they started deviating from that around the 50-year mark, 40-year mark or so. So as we start looking, and that all happened under Monroe, we really talk about that. It happened under Adams too. There were deviations, but they didn't start going, you know, hog wild, or really started making some turns that were very egregious in the spirit of the Constitution, 1820 with Monroe and so forth. And so my point is this, that even though those egregious violations started occurring, it was only setting the stage. And I say egregious, in contrast to today, they were minor, because they still weren't stepping on individual liberties and individual sovereignties. They were really minor. I mean, they still had the slavery problem, and they were perpetuating slavery. Yeah, that was terrible. It was bad. But look at today. Where are our liberties today? Look at how they're spending us into oblivion, and they're driving policies and programs designed to destroy us and the very Constitution that they're supposed to support. You see my point? And so where do we really need the ratification debates? Today, my friends, because these are legally binding terms and definitions of that compact that shuts down the courts. It shuts down, you know, any blabbermouth, whether that be Mark Levin or anybody else, to say we need a convention of states, or anybody that is trying to serve themselves. I can't, you know, take a quick second here, and let me just beg you, beseech you, and appeal to that Spirit of Christ, that Holy Spirit, to please humble yourself and take the time and read these ratification debates. Because if you do, you'll understand how I refer to these as the scriptures of our Constitution. Highlight the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, green for the Federalists and red for the Anti-Federalists, and see what was stated in green, which was basically what the conventions bought into, how that Constitution was sold by the Federalists. That was what was accepted. And you can see just, I mean, it's almost like if we had a full text of the Bible of the day, where, you know, the Antichrist and the, you know, people against Israel and all of that, when, you know, like Baal and so forth, if we actually had both sides, you know, in Scripture, in the Bible itself, so we could actually read, I would just tell you that that would probably cause a lot of confusion, because people wouldn't understand, you know, the contrast and the evil side of that. This is why I tell you to highlight the difference, so that you know those who were lying, those who were concocting basically wild assumptions, and you know, using and standing on violations of the Constitution itself for to prove that the Constitution was bad. In other words, it was really bad logic and terrible arguments. Which is why the Constitution was actually ratified without the Bill of Rights. Wow. Most people, the only thing they understand today is the Bill of Rights. When you ask them, how much do you understand about the Constitution? Well, I got the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, you know, right to bear arms. That's all they cite. That's the only thing they cite. They don't understand what Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, what's the difference between these three articles? Well, the majority of the people don't know. I know you know. I know my listeners know. But the fact of the matter is that we have allowed ourselves to become constitutionally literate. So the whole point, and this is why last Friday I just drove this home, that if we start creating, you know, a constitutional compliance committee and First Amendment and a First Amendment petitions committee in your counties, you'll actually create an organization of citizens vigilance, because based on those two concepts, people will get it. People will start understanding what constitutional compliance is and why the First Amendment petitions is so important. We're going to be right back and diving into the Bill of Rights after these two promos.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, to preamble or not to preamble, right? So here is the preamble for the Bill of Rights. And I've got it right. Sorry about that. I pulled up the wrong thing. So here's the preamble, like I was saying. And it goes like this. The conventions, now to be clear, this was presented to Congress on the 4th of March, 1789, and the Bill of Rights was ratified on the 15th of December. Anyway, the conventions, and it only took 1 year to ratify, just a little over a year to ratify the Bill of Rights, but it took 2 years to ratify, or actually took a little more time to ratify the Constitution. It took over a year to ratify the Constitution. And so, anyway, when we kind of look at all the states coming on board, especially getting Rhode Island and so forth, it took, 1792? So it took a lot more time to get all the states on board. Anyway, back to the preamble. The conventions of a number of states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Wow. I mean, this is great. And so going into the Bill of Rights, there were a total of 12 amendments. 12. The first one was rejected so far. It's actually been ratified by 11 states, and it's still out there to be ratified. This is the one that needs to be ratified. We're fools to think that one person can actually represent a million people or a half a million people. You can't when we're talking about representing, that means that they should recognize most all of the people that they represent.
Now, Washington, having commanded armies, understood the importance of knowing and knowing who who was there to die for the cause that he was fighting for. And so he felt it was very important that the representatives had, if not a full and profound knowledge of all of their constituents, at least a better appreciation of them and a familiarity of them than it would be that they just be a bunch of strangers. It was unacceptable in their paradigm of a representative to represent strangers. You got that? So what they did was they created these articles. And so this is what followed the preamble. Resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States in America, of America in Congress assembled, two-thirds of both houses concurring that the following articles be proposed to the legislature of the several states as amendments to the Constitution of the United States and or, all or any of which articles, when ratified by three-fourths of the said legislatures, to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. Now, the articles, now this is the next thing that was provided in this. This is the full text of the Bill of Rights, folks. Articles in addition to an amendment of the Constitution of the United States, and at this point in time, they use the terms of the United States. Now we have to use the term for the United States, and I'll get into why. Because the Constitution of the United States today, by definition, is the annotated Constitution. This is what the federal government is unconstitutionally doing in creating a living constitution so that they can change it as they go along and basically just adopt, you know, how they're going to enforce what they're doing, and they legitimize their usurpations. Anyway, articles in addition to an amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America proposed by Congress and ratified by the legislatures of the federal states pursuant to the fifth article of the original Constitution. And what they did here is they identified them as articles. Article the first, so in other words, the First Amendment. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100, after which the proportion shall be regulated by Congress. Now, I'm going to stop right there. So what they're talking about is that there shall be, based in the Constitution, and I told you this when we went through Article 3 or Article 1, that only 30,000 people, in other words, a one representative in the House of Representatives can only represent 30,000 people. If there's 30,001 people that need representation, you have to create a new representative. They can be less, but they can't be more. And so once a representative represents more than 30, they have to immediately break that up. And that would happen. That happens every 10 years during the consensus and the redistricting. Because once they take the snapshot, even though we know populations grow between, you know, the 1980 and 1990 or every 10 years until the next census, we don't make the adjustments until the 10-year mark. And so what they're basically saying is once we actually shift that the number in Congress shall be amount to 100, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 100 representatives nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons. So in other words, now you can actually, one representative can then represent 40,000. So what they do is they move up to 100 seats taken up by Congress in the House of Representatives, and then they say, okay, now you can represent 40,000 people because we're kind of filling the seats, we're filling the room here, and just to make it a little bit more manageable, we will allow ourselves to represent 40,000. Now, to be clear, to be clear, I got to go back on this. The Constitution, prior to its signing of 17 September 1787, the Constitution specified 40,000 people per representative. Washington felt that that was too high of a number, and he felt that to start off with, we needed to start off with 30. Boom. So this was one of the things, because Madison kind of understood that, you know, if by population growing and so forth, that America got big, it, you know, realistically, if it survived, you know, 100, 200 years, they would need these types of changes to accommodate that growth. But this is the interesting thing. He capped it. In this amendment, he capped it to 50,000. They could not fathom more than 50,000. So let me go through this some more here. So, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons until the number of representatives shall amount to 200. So once you have 200 representatives sitting in the halls of the House of Representatives in that assembly, once you have 200, then the proportion shall then be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000. So here's the interesting thing. Once you get to 2,000, then the representation could not be less than. They didn't want to play these, you know, these ebb and flowing where, okay, shoot, now they had 198. They wanted to maintain a very specific minimum number and grow it from there. And so, and I don't think it would have ever dipped down. I think what would have ended up happening was certain states would just be redistricting and it would allow them to play between 30 and 40 to account for that growth. Once they had that many congressional districts in their state, they just had to grow a few more and kind of split them up. Anyway, so the point in fact here is, folks, that here's an amendment that could be ratified that would drain the swamp. Now, I know everybody looks at this and they go, oh man, the government would grow so huge. No. Had they had the technology we possessed today, there is no way that Madison, Jefferson, and the framers would have thought it would be a good idea for the people to actually reside in Washington, D.C., because the only reason that they came together in Washington, D.C. is they needed to be able to communicate directly and dynamically so that they could work, get their work done, whether it be war or whatever the pressing issues were for the nation. And had they had Zoom or virtual technology, then I'm telling you, folks, they would have telecommuted, because there's nothing better than a representative being accessible to the people they represent. You better believe that they would have been huge endorsers for virtual meetings instead of actually creating a monstrosity and having the necessity of Washington, D.C. Now, it's not that we want to destroy Washington, D.C., but I will tell you, and we're going to get into this some more when we come back, I will tell you that this is how you drain the swamp, by displacing the representatives from D.C. to the United States. We'll get into this again in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.